Welcome.
Welcome to your first podcast.
He thinks all this gear is really cool. He's looking around like, what is all this shit?
Teach me how to podcast, Dan.
I want a podcast.
Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 234, which is chronological in order.
Yeah, after 233?
like 234.
Oh, yes. Yes, it is.
It's like the numbers go in order.
Yeah. Did we win something for that?
I hope. Ash, what did we win?
You guys win the sound of my voice.
Hey,
Ash is here. And I'm Yay. Your other host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And
you know, I'm Ash still.
Do stuff.
Are you still Ash?
I think so.
Yeah.
How was your trip to Bali?
My trip to Bali was eventful. I came back with a child that I stole.
Whoa.
That's what you do when you go to Bali, right, guys?
Yeah.
I guess so. You did the full Roberts, right?
Yeah. No, in reality, I was gone because my wife and I had a kid.
Hey,
and it's crazy and exhausting and awesome at the same time. But that's like, where I've been.
Congratulations, man. It's like you're on a vision quest.
Poop and pee and more poop and pee and drool. Just a lot of that. But it's weird. You don't like hate the poop and pee. You're like, it's poop and pee. You did a good poop and pee, kid. You pat him on the back and you're like, good Duke, man. You did a good Duke.
You've never like cared so much about that in your life until now. It's like,
oh yeah, he was like a little constipated for a day, and I was like, oh, he really needs to shit. And he shit, and I was like, he shit! I'm so excited, he shit! I'm like, you know, you just get excited about shit.
Did you open your door and shout it from the rooftops?
I did a dance. I was like, oh, like a happy dance of poo. It's like, oh good, he doesn't have like a broken butthole or something, you know?
Yeah, put it back.
Well, you never know. Like, you know, when your kid comes out, it could come out with like no butthole, a butthole on his foot. you don't really know what's going to happen.
That would be some interesting plumbing if that were the case.
Yeah, just fucking leaving like a snail like trail of poo everywhere.
Like an X-Men power.
It would be.
Having a butthole on your foot.
On your foot? Yeah. So would you just put your foot into the toilet? Is that how that would work?
Yeah, that'd be actually pretty convenient.
You could like stand up and check your phone and be like, hang on guys, I just have to do this real quick.
You had to go while you were out? Just slip your shoe off for a
second. Oh, yeah. Like, that'd be...
do biological warfare karate.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So just spraying the room.
Well, I was going to say that'd be really useful for like some of the venues that Matt and I used to play if you didn't have to sit on anything, you know? You could just put a foot up.
Some of?
Most of? All of?
I would say all of, probably. Yeah. Has anybody ever been to like a shitty dive club that has good bathrooms?
Yeah, I mean, a door is usually a bonus, right?
I was in a dive bar like a week ago, and not only did it had a door, but it was just one bathroom. Like the guy's bathroom was just a bathroom, mm-hmm. and then the door had no lock. But then there was like a sit down toilet in there that was way too far away from the door to like keep it closed. Like who is?
That is the worst.
It didn't make any sense.
You have to use the buddy system.
You need to post a guard. Yeah, you have to post a guard.
Yep.
Or just not care. Like, but if I'm pooping, I don't want strangers to watch.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. But if you have poop,
I had poop coming out of my foot, right? Yeah. Then it's okay. Then you can just stand there peacefully.
Well, there you go. Well, welcome back, Ash.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
I love to elevate the conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we got to do another episode of Ashless Chats, which I think is a fan favorite, right, at this point?
It is. Definitely. I mean, it's blowing them out there.
It's our highest rated episode.
Yeah.
Number one was only topped by number two.
Yep. Well, this was actually number three. I had to go check the archives.
Was it number three?
Yeah.
Ash, you've missed three shows. You're fired.
Yeah.
I know.
For sure. Sorry, I definitely haven't missed three shows.
Third strike and you're out.
I cracked a joke. We'll get into the rest of the show soon, I promise. I cracked a joke at Ash on Slack and immediately like pulled back because I realized how tired you probably were at that very moment. You were like, oh man, I haven't slept and you know I'm up every hour. And I was like, yeah, Conan woke me up at 6 a.m. this morning.
Oh, I saw that.
As a joke. And then I was like, joking, totally joking. I know you're deprived. You may not get this as a joke. I would murder me. But yeah.
I remember for a while there was a time when I was reading Nate's tweets, you know, because he's in on the West Coast, and it'd be like I'd be going to bed and he'd be getting up, or you know, he'd be going to bed and I'd be getting up or something.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So there was like time and space like no longer existed, right? Because like things were happening around you, but you weren't really aware of what was going on. Yeah, I'm assuming that's where you're at.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, he has like he wakes up every like about 3 hours during the night now since he's a newborn, you know. Yep. So we're up every about 3 hours, and sometimes he'll take like a good hour to go back to sleep. So last night I was up at like I don't know two to three, then I slept from 3 to 5, then I was up from 5 to 7, then I slept another hour. So it's just like you get kind of just, you know. And then at this point though, after almost 3 weeks, I'm kind of used to the weird nocturnal schedule. You know, and it's not so super bad. I have zero energy. I mean, I'm thrashed, but it's okay.
That's how I watched the first season of Star Wars Rebels, was at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right. I'm burning through. I've been rewatching Game of Thrones from the beginning, so I'm like on season 3.
Wow, that's amazing. Oh, that's
the good season. Yeah. You got through 1 and 2.
No, they're good, man. They're all.
They're
good.
Not good. Season 1 and 2 are no good. Anyways, we'll get into that later. Do you guys know who this episode's brought to you by?
I'm not sure. Why don't you tell us?
How about Loot Crate?
Hey, that was my guess, but I wasn't too sure.
it'd be a solid guess.
Yeah, okay.
If anybody's putting bets down, that's a
B-plus guess.
Yeah. So this month's theme is dystopia. Pop a red pill and take a trek through the rubble-strewn wasteland, a false paradise in the sky, and beyond, as you gather some exclusive loot from some of the best dystopia in pop culture. This month's crate includes items from Fallout, Bioshock Infinite, The Matrix, RoboCop, and The Terminator. I want whatever that RoboCop item is. That's what I want.
What if it's a DVD cover of the new film? Like an insert. Just the insert for the DVD.
Head over to lootcrate.com/ratedNA. And use the code RatedNA to get a discount on your subscription. And you get a box full of awesome and help out the podcast all in one fell swoop. So go to lootcrate.com/ratedNA and use that code. And get some dystopic things in your mailbox.
Perf.
Aww.
Oh, real quick. I bought myself the 25th anniversary Aliens crate.
Did you get that one?
A special crate for Aliens. Uh-huh. Yeah. It was awesome. Came with a themed shirt that was like nose art from one of the ships.
Yeah.
And it had some little alien eggs with aliens inside of it, and a hardcover version of a lot of the comics, and some other really fun stuff. It was like a really good specialty crate. So if you're looking to get a gift for someone, they do specialty crates all the time. I think there's another one coming up pretty soon. I know they did a Fallout crate, and I think there's like a Blizzard crate or something like that coming up. So keep your eyes on Loot Crate and look for the specialty crates if you're looking for a surprise gift for somebody.
Dope. Awesome.
Let's do the rundown.
Okay, so this week on the podcast, this is actually happening. We're going to talk about E3, which is coming up in a couple of weeks, and Ash has been playing Overwatch and Battleborn. I played Quantum Break, so we'll talk about those in the reviews. And then in our question of the week, we asked our audience to tell us what you've been up to. So what are you playing, watching, or reading? Let us know. And now, let's hear from Ash.
Well, had a kid, a son.
Mm-hmm.
He's a grand 3 weeks old, pooping all over the place. So really, that's the main thing I've been up to. But I have kind of snuck in some games of Overwatch and Battleborn, which I'll talk about in the review section. I like them both a lot, and believe it or not, they're both very, very different games. They get compared constantly, and they're not all that much alike at all, so we'll talk about that.
I'm not going to lie, just the marketing alone, like to someone like me that's not sort of in this, I'm not in tune with what's going on with like arena games, I honestly accidentally got them confused for the longest time. Until I see them side by side, I'm like, oh, these are actually separate words in different games.
Right. Yeah. Right. And, you know, it's strange because there's a lot of these coming out at the same time. And, you know, a lot of people use the term hero shooter for them. And they do have some similarities. But at the same time, When we talk about them in the review section, I'll kind of point to some of the major differences between the two and why they're both really incredibly solid games.
That's awesome.
That are just great. I talked about it in the intro, but I am rewatching Game of Thrones from the beginning, and I think I'm at the beginning of season four now, and this is my sort of like I'll watch it while, you know, feeding him in the middle of the night and stuff like that. And it's I absolutely love it going back and watching it just because I know everything makes more sense now. Like when you see like Walter Frey or you see like, you know, or you see these obscure characters, you're like, oh, I know who the fuck that guy is. The first time I watch it, everybody has a mustache. Everybody is like dirty, you know, everyone. And like, you don't know like who any of the people or any of the houses are or where they are geographically. So now, like, having watched it for so many years, going back to episode one and being like, oh, like, you know, they were up in Winterfell and they walked all the way down to King's Landing, and that's a really long walk. And here are all these characters that don't really interact. And you see like Jon Snow interact with like Sansa Stark, and you don't see that for a while again.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of really neat stuff in there, kind of going back and watching it again. I definitely recommend it. If you hated it the first time, go back now with some perspective and check it out.
It's not that I hated it, man. It's just like I think the show gets a lot of rose-colored glasses. I don't think the first season's good because it is unbelievable that a show of that quality in this genre got made. That's why the first season's like amazing, because you're like, how the fuck did this even exist in the first place? You know what I mean?
Right.
And then the second season is boring as shit, and then the third season you're like, ah, stuff's happening again. And then the fourth season you're like, okay, still with you. And then the fifth season you're like, what the fuck are we doing? And then now the sixth season's been good. I just don't think it's as like, I think every episode that gets a 9 or a 10 for Game of Thrones is actually probably like a 7 or an 8 is usually what I'm saying. I don't think the show is trash by any means. It's ridiculous that it exists. It's amazing. It's like super high quality and well written and well acted. And it's basically, I think what gets me a little bit about it, and I realized this the other day because somebody called it this and I was like, oh yeah. Somebody was like, Game of Thrones is the best soap opera that's on TV right now. And I was like, it is a fucking soap opera, and that's why it gets me, because it's the same reason like Grey's Anatomy got me and like other things will like annoy me. It's because I'll watch them.
Do you know that show is still on the air?
I know, right?
Oh, like I just can't believe it.
12 or something.
I think soap operas sometimes just do stuff and you're just supposed to go with it because it's like further story or whatever. And I just don't, I have a hard time doing that, I guess. Mm-hmm. So
let me actually pose this question to our listeners. Has Grey's Anatomy killed more characters than Game of Thrones? And I think the answer is probably yes. I think more
for sure.
I think so. I really do. I think they have just murdered everyone.
Yeah.
In the worst ways. Well, like I remember one, I used to watch that, I think until like season three, and like one of the main characters got chopped up by a helicopter. I was like, oh, okay. It's this kind of show.
Yeah.
But anyway,
you sure that wasn't ER busy. Or was that Grey's Anatomy?
It probably was both, actually. They all start borrowing each other's plots. There's like an Ebola guy and an hospital shooter guy. And they all did the same thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been, you know, obviously really busy and fun and exciting and tiring, but yeah, still, you know, finished up all the fall TV shows. They were all pretty okay. Mm-hmm. None of them like kind of blew my mind, which is you know, sad, but they were all good. Kind of spoiled, I guess, at this point. And other than that, not too much. Matt, what have you been doing?
Watching a bunch of TV that I'm adding as I talk. Which has been fun. I haven't played a ton of games, picked up, you know, I play Rise of the Tomb Raider as I go, which is still really fun to me. I can see some of it getting a little kind of repetitive maybe, or I don't know. It's puzzle gaming.
You do a little backtracking, right? Little collecting.
Yeah. That kind of stuff. But I enjoy it. It's like a nice break from everything else we had been playing for a while. I did get to go to a taping of a new show called Debate Wars with Michael Ian Black.
Oh, cool.
Oh, nice. He's great.
Yeah, he's hilarious. And we like going to tapings when we get tickets to it, because it's just kind of, it's something you get to do here that you don't get to do a lot of places. And it's neat to see a show before maybe it's aired or it's going to air. And this is a new series for that streaming platform, CISO. TV or whatever, NBC's like comedy TV. Have you guys heard of this?
Oh, okay.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think I heard about it in passing, but I don't know too much about
it. It's like $3 or $4 a month, and they stream, like, they have all their back catalog, so it's all like SNL and Fallon and all those shows. They have like the whole back catalog of all those shows, and then they're producing like tons of new content. So I think Scott Aukerman had a show from Comedy Bang Bang called Bajillion Dollar Properties, I think, which is like a send up of the reality TV show stuff. And Dan Harmon's doing a thing on there. So there's a bunch of people bringing comedy to it. And this is, I would compare it to maybe At Midnight. Basically, they have like two topics, and there's two panels of two like comedians, and then they literally debate the topics. But it's like super comedic and kind of wild and crazy, and like things. He had a guy who looked sort of like, he called him Masking Tape Kevin Bacon. And he would masking tape his nose up to look like Kevin Bacon. And he kind of did when he did that. And then he was wearing Footloose, the suit that he wears in Footloose. And then he would press a button to have him come out, and he'd start dancing like whenever Michael Ian Black pressed this button. And it was ludicrous, but it was hilarious. And the comedians kind of like faced off in an actual debate, and then the crowd voted at the end. We literally had the little punch button voter things that you have like
neat.
Oh, nice.
The old game shows.
I've always wanted to press one of those.
I know, it was cool. I got to press one. But so that was really fun. And I think, I don't remember when they said that's coming out. I don't think it's for a little while. But CISO looks neat. I don't know. So maybe when you see that, you could see Debate Wars. So it was cool. And then we've been watching a bunch of Star Wars Clone Wars.
Nice.
How are you getting caught up?
Yeah, we never finished it. And then Melissa never even started it. So she started it and kind of caught up to where I was in like season 2 or 3. And then it's kind of just been our weekend, like while we eat eggs show. Like we just throw it on and we'll sit on the couch and eat breakfast.
Weekend cartoons, man. That's the way. Yeah. That's when I would always watch Clone Wars. I'd make breakfast and plop in front of the TV like a little kid.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's such a good show.
And it really just gets better.
It's kind of ridiculous. The best part about it is I was remembering that a lot when I first started watching it, I remembered talking to you, Scott, or maybe it was on the show even, saying that I at first didn't realize that the recaps at the beginning weren't actually related to the episode that came before it. They introducing you to where you were going to be in the story, essentially. But the way they read it was like, last time or something like that.
Yeah, they get you all caught up.
Yeah, it was
all that comes out and tells you like what's going on.
Yeah, I was like, did I miss 3 episodes or something? Like, what? I don't remember any of that happening. And then they kind of plop you down into a point, and you catch up with the story or whatever. So we've been doing that. Caught up on Penny Dreadful, so we're in season 3 now, which is out currently, and it is very good. Probably the best season they've had. Season 2 was good, better than season 1, and I liked it a lot at the time. And now 3 is kicking off even better. So. Like, honestly, I think it's one of the most overlooked shows on TV and is very, very good. No, Matt Caron's opinion of his own or whatever. and then I watched. Did you watch Preacher, Ash?
Not yet. No,
it's pretty good.
Right here, it's good. It's getting lots of positive buzz.
It's pretty good. Yeah.
Which is good because it's sort of one of those properties that everyone really was like terrified to do, and it's so loved by the community. You know?
Yeah. They cast it super well, and then shot it really well. Like, everything looks beautiful on it. They're definitely putting plenty of money into it. And then it feels like they're going to do a slow burn on this. Like, they're not going to rush through the books by any means. The beginning was different than the beginning of the first trade that I remember. Like, they changed it a little, his backstory. But it's good. Definitely watch it if you have not watched it yet. I think that's it. That's pretty much everything I've been up to. How about you, Scott?
Should I review the children's shows that I've been watching lately?
Sure. Yeah, let's see.
Well, I've been watching a show called Little Einsteins on Netflix.
Uh-huh.
And in each episode, they talk about a piece of art and a piece of music. And then they fly around in a rocket ship and do adventures. And that's pretty good. That's an exciting show.
Uh-huh.
And I've been watching another show on Netflix called Octonauts, which is a British children's show.
Okay.
And they go on adventures, but in the ocean, and they learn about different creatures in every episode.
All right. Nice.
And that's about it. No, I'm just kidding. interestingly, I think this is kind of a testament to Netflix, but I was looking through my queue the other day, and like all of the shows that were recommended for me, or like everything that I was kind of like had queued up or had been watching is a Netflix show at this point, or at least the first 10 things are, which I think is pretty impressive for Netflix to, you know, that they have so much content at this point that it's some of, you know, a lot of it is actually good, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because my wife was watching some of the Chelsea Handler shows, and obviously we're still watching Daredevil, and we have, you know, Jessica Jones that we need to get caught up on. And the two that I want to briefly talk about is the second season of Kimmy Schmidt, which is kind of crazy. I feel like they did more like smaller story arcs within, there's kind of like one arc throughout the whole season, but then they basically blocked off a series of episodes. And at one point Tina Fey shows up for a couple episodes, and it's hilarious. Yeah. It's really good.
About 5 episodes into season 2, and I noticed that the supporting cast is getting a lot more time.
Yes.
Like a lot of it, I mean, there was a lot of Titus in season 1, but I feel like at least the first 5 episodes is like all Titus. And then the landlord lady is getting a lot more screen time too, who's Carol Kane, who's hilarious.
Yeah, there's a lot more stuff going on in this season. Have you seen Anna Camp's character yet in the show?
No, I have not.
Okay. I won't talk about it, but I really enjoyed this season. I thought it was different, you know, story-wise from the last season, but overall probably better. Like, I feel like I laughed more in this season just because of the variety of the humor. I feel like the humor got smarter in this season, which is cool.
It's a great show.
Yeah.
I mean, Ellie Kemper, like I would literally watch Ellie Kemper in anything at all.
I was thinking about like, that. She is believable. Like, I believe she is Kimmy Schmidt. Like, if I saw her on the street, I would expect her to be that person.
And she probably gets that all the time too, because I mean, people probably expect her to be that cheery and just ridiculous, but yeah, so she's phenomenal in that show.
Yeah, cool. So I'm glad you're watching. That's exciting. The other show that we started is Lady Dynamite. Do you guys know, are you familiar with the show?
I've watched it.
Do you watch all of it?
No, not yet.
Okay. I just watched the first episode, and it's
okay.
But it is a show from the mind of Maria Bamford, who is a stand-up comedian. She's been around for a long time. If you don't know who she is, maybe you saw her a few years ago. She did a Christmas campaign for Target, and she was like this like crazy lady getting ready for Christmas and doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
But she's
like a small blonde lady who does a very specific like business lady voice.
It's like alternative comedy, I guess, is what she described it as.
She was on Comedians of Comedy with Patton Oswalt and Brian Posehn and all those. She was on that tour show that he did.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, she's been kind of underground alternative comedy since then.
Yeah. And she, I don't know if this is like, I don't know what her real voice is. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it is the mousy voice or if
it is.
Yeah.
I've heard her just like regular interviews. And
okay.
Stuff. That's her real voice.
Yeah. That's incredible. But her brain is very interesting, because this show, I feel like, is just sort of like her, like everything, she just pulls things out of her head, and it's almost like I feel like when I watch it, I'm on cold medicine, you know. You get the same?
Yes.
Yeah.
it is a insane show. So it deals with, she went through like a lot of it's weirdly true, sort of.
Yes.
She went through a sort of a mental breakdown, essentially ended up leaving comedy entirely, moving back home, and going into like intensive therapy to find like a combination of medications and other things to kind of like figure herself out and survive it, you know? So the show is loosely based on that experience and being a comedian around it and kind of her coming back to comedy. It's also executive produced by Mitch Hurwitz from Arrested Development, mm-hmm. which I think explains the kind of pacing of the show and the way they will play with internal references to things that are going on in the show. Like, there's a lot of that happening.
There's some fourth wall stuff in the show.
The one I think you can spoil that doesn't spoil anything in the show is Patton Oswalt comes on as a cop. And in the middle of him doing dialogue as his character, Maria says something about doing stand up on the show, and he like with there's no change in anything on the screen. He just stops talking as his character, and he's like, "Oh, you can't do that. You can't do comedy on. Don't do stand up on the show. It's been done. You know, Louis did it. Seinfeld did it. You can't do stand up on the show." And he like all of a sudden he's talking to Maria about the show that is currently airing, about how they're going to shoot. Like, it starts breaking walls in a really weird way. And it is, like Scott said, you feel like you're on cold medicine. Like, it is hard to, like, stuff jumps pace so quickly and moves around in the storyline without really giving any explanation whatsoever.
Yeah, it makes no sense. It almost, like, it's not the same exactly, but it reminds me, it's weird in the way that, like, the original Pee-wee film movie is weird. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, things are just kind of happening, and I'm watching it. I'm not necessarily laughing out loud, but I can't stop watching it because it's like so, it's so fascinating, the things that are going on. And like the she has a bunch of like other comedians in the show, so there's a lot of cameos, and it's just like, it's so bizarre. And I don't think it's bad, but I'm not, it's like not laugh out loud funny in the way that Kimmy Schmidt is. And it's just kind of like, I want to know what's going to happen in the show. Like, I'm hooked just because it's so weird.
It's really funny. Man, Kimmy Schmidt, for whatever reason, just did not grow. Everybody loves it, like my wife included, and you guys. And I just, is like not entertaining me, and I don't know why. Like, that show wasn't laugh out loud funny to me, and neither is Lady Dynamite. The thing I said about Lady Dynamite, though, was that it's a show that I want to keep watching that I can't binge watch.
No.
You know what I mean? I just can't plow through four episodes. Like, it would just be, I feel like my brain would just be like mush by the end of the four episodes trying to keep up with everything that's going on.
You're like trying
to
pay attention, and you're like, is this part of the joke? Are you talking to me now? Are you talking to your characters? Like, what's,
yeah.
I don't understand. It's so crazy. But anyways, that's Lady Dynamite. And if you've never, if you're not familiar with Maria Bamford, go back and listen to her old stand-up albums because they're really funny.
They're really funny. She has one that she did in front of her parents, a stand-up special on Netflix.
Wow.
And it's her in her living room with only her parents as the audience. And it is super weird and mildly uncomfortable. And she does jokes about her mom, like, all over the place.
Oh,
and
my,
like,
God.
It's to her mom. And they're laughing and stuff, but it is very, yeah, she is out there as like conceptually as a comedian, and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm also playing just some random like point and click adventure game on Xbox that I needed a break after playing Quantum Break, and we'll talk about that game later.
Was that a pun?
No, it just kind of happened that way.
Oh, okay. He needed a quantum break.
I needed a quantum break from Quantum Break. But yeah, I'm still kind of into this whole thing about exploring just like weird idiot Xbox titles, like just kind of digging through the store and seeing what is available and playing games that are weird or different just because, I don't know, like I'm ready for it. You know, it's like we always say, it's like you play a AAA title or something that takes a long time or something that's like high budget value, and you just kind of need to do something else to kind of wash it away before you can move on to the next thing. Right. So that's that. And why don't we move into the news?
News.
So we are going to talk a little bit about E3. E3's in just a couple weeks now. Actually, literally like 2 weeks from now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be an interesting E3. A lot of the big dogs have kind of pulled out. There is still going to be a whole lot of stuff. The first thing on our list to talk about for E3 is, what the hell is Nintendo's new console, and are we going to see anything about it at E3? So Nintendo is going to be on the E3 floor, but apparently all they're showing
just
is
had one game, right?
Yeah, one game. So that's a little a little weird and a little strange. But do you think we're going to see any of the Nintendo NX there on the E3 floor, or do you think they're saving that for something else?
I think it's going to be not E3. I think it's going to be some point in the future. They're so weird now. Did you hear that they did something in a business meeting where they wanted to sort of rewrite what like their business like operating procedures were to include things like hotels and like other weird like restaurants and other weird things?
Really?
I did not see that.
Yeah.
Don't you feel like they're a little beyond that at this point?
Let's see. I think it was like movies. Here, I'll look this up real quick, but you can keep talking about the NX.
I feel like they can't play their own game anymore. You know what I mean? Like they need to, like, if they do it on their own as their own announcement, that's fine, but like they really need to own this thing and just be like, here is a machine people will want. And not be like, here's our weird, quirky take on how you play video games. Like, I feel like everybody's just like, guys, what are we doing now, you know?
Do you guys think that they're going to build a machine that third party can develop for? I mean, do you think that they're worried about getting, you know, outside developers to develop for their new system? Or do you think they're going to try and directly compete with Xbox and with Sony? Or do you think that they're maybe just going to try and build a machine that is, you know, only for, you know, basically what they did with, you know, their last few systems? They just built a system to play Nintendo games because, you know, third party really didn't develop for them.
I have a theory about this. Like, I think that, you know, originally Nintendo was a toy company, and then when the other companies, you know, they built a gaming console in an era where that was just getting started. And now we have sort of like three major players in that space, and now they're kind of lumped into that. And I think that somewhere along the line, either they sort of got into the race, you know, they kind of like got baited into this race of, you know, console race or whatever. But I think at the heart of what they're doing, they make toys, really. You know, they try different things and they make weird controllers, and it's like, it isn't what you would expect to play, you know, in the way that you play video games. But I think that that's okay. And I don't think they should be competing, but, you know,
but
mentally, like, in the same space they are, you know,
that's right. I guess that's what I mean. Like, they need to own, like, Wii was a quirk, right? Like, Wii was an outlier to the normality of what Nintendo is. So they owned, you know, the first Nintendo, they owned Super NES. Those were straightforward gaming platforms that just destroyed everybody that came in contact with them, right? PlayStation shows up, Xbox comes out, starts blowing Nintendo out of the water. The GameCube was a mess. I guess the 64 did well, probably, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they still didn't go to discs. You know, they still stuck with that cartridge for the 64. Yeah,
they did cartridges for the 64. They did those weird mini discs for the GameCube for unknown reasons. And then, like, they did the Wii, and the Wii just took off in, like, a weird way with families that is, I think, unforeseen, probably even by them. Maybe hoped for, but definitely not, you know, I don't think they were predicting those kind of numbers out of the blue. Mm-hmm. But it was also a super cheap box and did what it did well, and then that was that, right? And then they tried to get, I really feel like the one I just forgot the name of, what the hell was the one after the Wii?
Wii U.
The Wii U.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I really felt like they were trying to, like, get weirdly cute with it. They were trying to, like, enter a space with this idea of second screen controllers that they just didn't, it didn't fit them. It didn't really fit their thing that they won with the Wii. Like, it was like, it became more expensive. Like, everything just was, it was like a weird misstep that made no sense. And I feel like if they go back to just owning their thing and they're just going to make their thing and own it, then that makes sense for them. But, like, I don't know. There's, like, coming up with some new core concept that is weird and expensive and unheard of and hard for anyone to develop for, seemingly even for them, because it's not like they were putting out amazing second screen Nintendo experiences, as far as I can tell.
Right. No, not really. Yeah.
So it's like that's where I get weirded out by them, that I don't understand what they're doing. And then when you say, like, they're looking at hotels and shit, I'm like, are they doing well enough to look at hotels and restaurants? Like,
here's the thing. I found the one of the news articles that says, so they're like, their plan to diversify their business could include things like medical and health devices, which is kind of makes sense because they had that finger sensor thing a few years ago, computer software, eating establishments, and IP licensing, which may include expanding into theme parks like Universal Studios.
Well, okay. Expanding their IP licensing makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's an easy sell for them. Like, that's like, sure, put Mario in your park and do it the way we want it to be.
You know? And they're going
to
have, you know, they had that Miitomo app that came out, and they're going to do one for Animal Crossing and one for something else too. So, I mean, now they're on mobile, on a platform right. That's not their own. So, they're definitely trying new things.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys this. What would it take for you to purchase a Nintendo NX? Like, well, what would make you go out, like, and get it, you know, not a day one, but
me or Scott.
A month one purchase.
Do you want my real answer? Zelda game.
A new Zelda game.
Yeah. I would buy the console just to play Zelda, because I don't know. That's important enough to me to do that.
Okay. Matt, anything?
I mean, it can't compete with the PlayStation or Xbox, because I don't have a PlayStation. So, like, you know, I'm not even two system on that one yet. So a third one makes no difference to me.
Mm-hmm.
It would either need to have some unique game that Scott vouches for in a way that I'm like, I have to play this thing, or it would need to be super affordable and have like some sort of thing that makes sense for me to want to do, or Melissa would want to play, or whatever it might be. I mean, another $400 or $500 box that does a thing that I don't care about won't. No way. So, if it's a $200 box that does a thing that seems really cool and unique and fun and has games at launch that are worth playing, then sure. It just seems unlikely. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sort of going to copy your answer. It would have to be, you know, something unique and fun and relatively cheap. I don't need another machine to compete with my Xbox, my PC, and my PlayStation. That's, you know, a little overboard. And also, I'm not a massive fan of a lot of their original IPs. Like, I respect them a whole lot, but I can't tell you the last time I, like, sat down with a Mario game and was like, this is my fucking bread and butter.
I know. Honestly, I feel like I can't play any more Mario games at this point. Like, I've seen it all so many times, and I'm just kind of like,
yeah.
I love it. You know, like I really, you know, probably the series I enjoy the most right now is Mario Galaxy. And if they put a new one out, I probably wouldn't even be, you know, running to the store. It's really just Zelda. I'm not going to lie. It's just Zelda at this
point. Zelda.
Yeah. It's all I want to play.
I was never a Zelda guy. Yeah, that's why I'm trying to think if there was an IP that
Metroid.
I didn't grow up a Nintendo kid. I was a Sega dude.
I mean, people are stoked on Metroid. People are stuck on, Star Fox, but you know, this I think this last Star Fox was made by Platinum Games, which is kind of, you know, it's not the Star Fox that you're going to be familiar with. They're kind of doing,
what if they came out with like a new Donkey Kong World or something?
I don't know. I mean, maybe Mario Galaxy, definitely Legend of Zelda. I was never like a super huge Metroid fan, so
Are we the demo anymore though?
We're getting
on in years.
Hey, hold on, guys. You two are the demo. I am not.
Sure. I mean, honestly, if there were Animal Crossing, I'd buy it for my wife. So,
yeah,
it's pretty simple.
Nintendo has squarely been aimed at families for decades now. Like, I don't know that they were ever not aimed at families. So,
yeah, but I mean,
you know, you're maybe a little young still in that demo. Weird. You've aged out of one demo, and you're too young in the other demo, guys. How do you feel?
I know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point with Nintendo though is that like, as a consumer, you should have the expectation that if you're buying one of their systems, you're going to be playing their games. You shouldn't buy it expecting to play, Fallout 5.
Yeah, no one's developing for it anyway. I mean, none of the big developers are making stuff for NX right now that I know of. So
I would still love to see a third party game that does something unique with whatever the thing is they did. Like if the Wii had come out and been super cheap right off the bat, and somebody did something awesome with it, that you put that game. That system becomes a different thing. And instead what ended up happening was they did a weak sell on their product. Everyone was like, I don't know what the value of that is, and no one developed for it. And then it just did nothing essentially at the end of the day. You know, like you can't roll a thing out and be like, you can't roll out VR and then make no arguments for why it would be important and then have no games to show for it either. Like that would make VR fail immediately as well. Mm-hmm. You know? So
right.
It's just confusing, I guess. I just don't understand sometimes their quirkiness doesn't pay off in the way it should.
If they're going to build something new, they need to be able to explain to us why we need to have it and what is new about it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. You want to talk about new Xbox
stuff? Yeah, so there's no real solid information prior to E3, but there are rumblings that we're going to get information about the new Xbox and the new PlayStation at this year's E3. Those are going to be the big reveals.
Two new Xboxes. There's a rumor. Did you hear that?
Oh, really? I didn't hear this. No.
There's a rumor.
Did they say some sort of like Chromecast media Xbox device?
Yeah. No. So the rumor is that they're going to announce a sort of a smaller, and I'm not speaking physically, but smaller, you know, maybe in terms of features or power or whatever, which like Matt said is supposed to be some kind of streaming box, maybe something that could completely replace the set-top box in your house. My prediction is that it's going to have a TV tuner built into it in the hopes that they can replace your set-top box. And I would guess if it would be smaller, then it would maybe not have a disc drive and be digital only for games.
Okay.
Depending on what games it can handle.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then the other part of the rumor is that the beefy, like 4K virtual reality ready system will not appear until sometime next year.
So you think they're going to announce what the specs are for the big new Xbox and say coming next year, VR, HoloLens ready, da 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 da?
Probably. And I think what we're going to hear more about is whatever this like smaller hardware box is going to be. I mean, that's the rumor at least.
Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, the only reason that's surprising is that they are price dropping the regular Xbox right now like crazy.
Oh,
like
there has to be something new because they're just blowing out inventory at this point.
The inventory is just getting sold. Like the new, like you can get a gig drive Xbox for like $299 with a controller, I think, or something right now. Like
They were doing deals like you get the console and like five games, you know, like three of them were digital and two, you know, like, and then one that is packed in and then you pick the last one and it's like, oh my God, $300 bucks. And then you get a gift card or something. It's like, it's ludicrous. Like what you could get right now.
Blowing it out. The media box thing, like, I here's my simple question. Ash, you have a Fire TV, right?
Yeah.
Scott, you have a Roku.
Oh, I have a Roku and an Amazon. I have just like shit laying around, you know, that don't
like,
even...
But you do have, you have like a Roku that you use on regular basis.
Yeah, my main device in our office is a Roku 3.
And then I have an Apple TV, the newer one.
Mm-hmm.
Given the choice right now, remove gaming from the thing entirely. Given the choice between your Xbox and the device you currently have to watch streaming media on, which one are you going to go to?
Oh, Roku 3 every time.
Ash?
Yeah, I'm become very fond of the Fire.
Yeah,
Fire
I would go to my Apple TV. I go to my Apple TV in a heartbeat. The Xbox is terrible at that stuff. Like, it's a great gaming device. It's a really good living room like unifier. The Kinect is great to me. Like, I like controlling stuff on it, and I watch it in my living room based on the fact that I don't want to hook up a secondary device to my TV when I've got the Xbox there.
Yeah,
but like, given the choice with media stuff, like, there's no way I'm going to pick up a $100 Xbox, you know, minor gaming machine that is focused on streaming and TV over any other device that I have. Like, the Fire TV is great. The Roku is great. The Apple TV is great. Like, I don't know why they're getting in this space if they make this move.
Yeah, I don't know. It's
confusing to me. Like,
yeah, that's true. And the reason why I use the Xbox specifically is because I can do all the streaming, plus I can use the external tuner with a antenna.
Yeah, that too. Yeah,
I do. So having local channels is a big deal as well. You know, you guys remember PlayStation tried something like this. They had like a $99
the View.
Yeah, and it was supposed to, what did it do? It like streamed your PlayStation to this box in a different room or something.
Yeah, supposedly you could dual channel it though, I think, right? Like you could watch TV on the View while you're playing on I might be making that though. Don't
you know what's weird too is that, like, you know, here we are a couple years later and like PlayStation is now the ones that are silently pushing their like TV service, like a Sling TV competitor.
Yeah. The $50 cable thing.
Yeah. And so here we are all this time later. Xbox is the one that's making games now, not really talking about TV anymore. And now PlayStation is trying to push that TV that nobody wanted and made fun of Microsoft for 4 years
ago.
It's
all bullshit.
Yep. Smoke and mirrors. Everybody's doing the same thing. So
I mean, I don't know. I hope they announce the bigger or the slim, you know, bigger, beefier slim box or whatever it ends up being.
Mm-hmm.
That would be nice to see and hear and hopefully be on sale relatively soon. The media box is, I mean, maybe it'll do well. It seems like a really weird misstep for them to do now just because it's not their forte. In the same way that the View, you know, they were fucking clearancing those things off borderline immediately at like Target and everywhere. It was like, please buy a View. We'll give you, you know, 6 months of free PlayStation cable TV with it and all this other shit.
I think that thing only natively played like Vita games or something, you know, like.
Yeah, it was a weird gaming thing, and then it did the TV mostly. Like, you could watch their streaming service through it or something.
Oh, weird. I don't even remember it.
Yeah.
I flushed it from memory.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So we'll see. I mean, I think I'm just excited at the prospect of new hardware, regardless of if I want it or not, just because I feel like their engineering team is really making an effort to bring better products to gamers, you know, with, you know, the Xbox Elite controller. I mean, I didn't get one, but I think it's awesome that they would even take the time to do the research and do the engineering work and come up with this thing that's like, hey, we built a controller for you and we built this tool that you can customize all your, you know, presets, and that tool is now available for your regular controller now too. So it's kind of like, I just want them to keep building things and not just kind of rest, you know. Them being in the second place might actually be the best thing for people that are Xbox fans like myself.
Right.
Because they have to try harder.
Stuff.
Yeah.
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 The new PlayStation. Let's
talk about games.
The PlayStation's old news, right? The 4K or whatever.
We still no real solid information. Yeah. So, you know, it's obviously rumored that they're going to announce its existence at E3, but we don't even know.
The Neo. So. That's the code name. PlayStation Neo, supposedly. Yeah. So that are
games.
The games. Let's talk about the games.
Yeah.
Obviously, we don't know anything about the new IPs that are going to be announced, and there will be some. That's always like the most exciting thing. We're like, hey, there's this fucking game, and you never heard of it, and it looks awesome. And, you know, sort of what happened with Watch Dogs and stuff many years ago. Mm-hmm. But now we do know that some things are probably going to be there. Things like Titanfall 2 are going to have a larger presence. We haven't really seen gameplay in such yet, but they are rumored to be at E3 with Titanfall 2 gameplay, and obviously there's a rumored story mode for the game now, and all sorts of fun stuff coming down the pipe for Titanfall 2. So if you were a fan of the first one, I don't think you're going to be disappointed by the second one. Also rumored, you're going to see some stuff for Watch Dogs 2, which was probably like next to No Man's Sky was the most hyped thing I had ever seen from an E3.
Poor No Man's Sky.
Yeah, when Watch Dogs first got announced at E3, it was like, that's all anybody talked about.
Dude, poor No Man's Sky. Is this going to be their fourth E3 or third E3? Third E3, right?
Yeah. Are they even going to bring it there?
I hope not.
Well, that's
not.
What I mean. Like this is their third E3 of like this game that exists waiting for it to come out.
Like fans, press, marketing teams, just leave Hello Games alone. Just let them finish their game. Like stop.
Right.
Making them come out and show it, just let them finish it.
I feel like every human in existence, when they that has ever like built a thing, when they heard that No Man's or Hello Games is like three people building this game, everybody was like, "It's gonna be done when?" Yeah. Like, no, it ain't. This is gonna take forever.
I feel like the perception of this game at this point is that people, it's being hyped like it's like Star Citizen money, and it's more like Gone Home money. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
And I think they're
not rich by any means.
Yeah. And I think if people don't calibrate their expectations of this game, people are going to be disappointed. I think it's going to be some weird, quirky indie game with like exploration and some down-tempo music. And it's just going to be like something you do, not like, I don't know. I feel like we've seen too much of it without really not having seen enough of it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And they just delayed till August, and there was a big fervor over that, and a lot of the developers got like death threats and stuff.
That's terrible
because of the additional delay. So it's
the internet's I wish
the best for those guys. Oh yeah, the internet. Love it.
Love it. Yeah.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Anyway, so Watch Dogs 2 apparently is going to show up there. At least that's the rumor. I think they're changing the game a lot tonally, making it a little bit more cyberpunky.
I was going to say, did you guys like that game? I mean, you both played it.
I really did. I played the shit out of it, man. I almost 100%ed. Yeah, I played a lot of it, and I don't know what it was about it. It reminded me a lot of like a GTA.
Mm-hmm.
But I also really loved the multiplayer in that game. It had one of the most unique multiplayer systems where you could jump into somebody's game and try and hack them while they're playing. Like they'll be running a story mission, and you can just show up and mess with them. I thought that was great. And it also had a great mobile app that you could actually hack into people's games and turn on their traffic lights and stuff like that. It was so cool.
Yeah, I think I terrorized both of you guys at different points in the game.
Go ahead, Scott. Sorry.
I was just going to say the mobile app was like very OP in the sense that you could just terrorize the other player, you know, because you're just tapping buttons on the app and like putting up traffic lights and barricades and just blowing things up around them. And I didn't really understand the point of it, but it was fun to play.
I think you saying that it was GTA-ish explains why I kind of fell out of it, because that tends to be what I do with GTA games. Like I really enjoy them for a little while, and then I just kind of like I just slowly play myself out of wanting to play the game, and then something comes out and I stop playing it entirely. You know? That makes sense. But I did enjoy it. I mean, I'd like to see it. I could see the changes being really fun. So I'd be interested in seeing what those are.
Yeah, I hope so. More robots and stuff you can hack and control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Other stuff, we've seen the trailer for Battlefield 1 now, but apparently there was going to be some new gameplay stuff of Battlefield 1 in action. So the World War 1 Battlefield game for next year, which is pretty exciting. Or is it this year? It might be this actual winter, if I think about it. So I guess it is coming sooner than later. And the big rumor is that Rockstar may show something Red Dead related. And
man,
I don't know if there's anything factual other than that leak that came out a little while ago that we talked about. But Red Dead 2 is supposedly in development, so we may actually see some stuff.
That'd be crazy. Penny Dreadful Season 3 goes to the West. They go to the Wild West.
I heard about that. That sounds so cool.
And the moment like I saw it, the first thought in my brain was, I want to play Red Dead again. it felt like the moment you saw it, it was like, oh, that game just hit that tone so perfect. So I'm excited for that. That's probably my most excited thing.
It was great.
You know what I'm excited about, and this might seem a little juvenile, is the new South Park game.
Oh, fuck yeah, man.
The Fractured Butthole.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not being made by Obsidian. There's a different developer this time around. I think that's okay. Because one of Ubisoft's in-house teams is going to make it. I feel like the type of game that Obsidian makes is sort of a known quantity at this point. So if they develop the second game, I would already kind of know what to expect. And I think that a new developer could implement new RPG systems in the game, because the first game was sort of simplistic in its combat systems, and I think there's an opportunity to do more. And
I mean, as long as Trey Stone and
Matt Stone and Trey Parker,
Matt Stone and Trey Parker, rather, I knew I was going to do that. Like in my head, I was like, don't reverse the names, and then I reversed them, and then I was like, that's not reversed, and then I reversed it. You know what I mean? As long as they're involved as heavily as they were in the first one, because that's really what was fun about the game was the tone was. It being South Park.
And it just looked like South Park. It looked like a TV show. Yeah.
It looked like it and it sounded like it. And the voices were all there. And that's what really made that game. So
It's interesting because the show itself, and I've talked about this a couple times, is in a very different place than it was when the first game came out. Since then, South Park has done two seasons of basically connected narratives. So all the episodes are related to one another, which they'd never done before, and they've kind of been taking on different issues too, so it'd be interesting to see what they do for this game. And I feel like the development of their game in turn influenced the show now, so we'll see if the new version of this show will influence what this new game will be. So I think that's really fascinating.
Crazy stuff. Well, this next thing is something I wanted to talk about just briefly. We don't have to get super deep into it because it's something that I actually said I wanted, I think, 3 weeks ago, maybe, or maybe it was a little longer than that, on the podcast. I was like, it'd be really great if somebody launched a Marvel-like unlimited reading service, but for other comic books. And lo and behold, Comixology, who is owned by Amazon now, launched what is called Comixology Unlimited, and it's $7 a month, and you have access to it's Image, Dark Horse, Pop, what's the other one, POW or BAM or whatever, but it's and then IDW, literally giving you thousands of books to read, whenever you feel like reading.
It's more than you could read.
And tons of crazy high quality titles. Saga is on there. All the G.I. Joe stuff that I loved that we talked about on this podcast a long time ago. Walking Dead, Scott Pilgrim, Hellboy. This is incredible. And it's $6 a month. So
that's great.
Yeah. This isn't an ad for them. I literally said, wouldn't this be great? And then they made it. So to counterbalance all the S and the D I'm doing right now for them. It's still Comixology, so the UI is still confusing as shit and hard to navigate, and you're unsure of what books you currently are trying to get or not, because they still do that weird thing where they don't want to give you purchasability on your iPad, so you have to get it from the web store before.
Yeah, because they don't want to pay Apple for the sale.
Yeah,
that'll never happen. It'll never happen because Audible doesn't do that either.
I don't know how Amazon skirts this. My only feeling is that they're Amazon and that's how they do it. But
because they can, they do it because they can.
Yeah. Apple doesn't generally like that. It seems surprising.
They'll just redirect you to the website. They do that with their MP3s and their audiobooks. And to your earlier point, I think that once they see how this takes off, or doesn't take off, I think if it takes off, then Amazon will just probably assign you know, a UX team and just fix the whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
It'll be pretty simple.
They do it sort of in the same way that Prime works. Like, I think you can still view the full library, and then it'll be marked as if it's available for unlimited or not, and then you can grab it for free and read it in the reader. But it's pretty cool. So for $6 a month, you get a lot of really awesome titles that have been put out through independents. And then you never know, Marvel and DC may come, but probably not. I wouldn't hold your breath on those two. So
Lock and Key is on here.
Oh, yeah, Lock and Key's on there. Yeah. I think Buffy's on there. Like, there's a ton of stuff, like a ton of really great reading. So
awesome. That's super cool.
Check it out.
Nice.
Good deal. Let's take a quick break and come back with some reviews.
Cool.
Some reviews. I think last time we talked about Battleborn had not released quite yet. We talked about the beta, and then I took a little bit of a break, and then Overwatch came out as well. So Battleborn and Overwatch are both out now, and the unfortunate thing is that they're out at the same time, because I think if Battleborn would have come out, you know, 5 months ago or 5 months from now, it would have done very, very well.
Which one's Blizzard?
Okay, so Blizzard is Overwatch.
And
and Battleborn is Gearbox.
Gearbox, right. Okay.
So you have two publishers that are, you know, and developers that are absolutely incredible at what they do. And I think both games are insanely polished and both have a whole lot to offer. I'll talk about Overwatch first because that just came out and everyone's freaking out about it. And I kind of want to explain, you know, why it's great, first of all, and also why it's really different from Battleborn and why you should at some point give both a shot. But Overwatch just came out. It's called a hero shooter. The thing I can liken it the most to in the world of games that I've played in the past are probably the Team Fortress games.
Mm-hmm.
So if you like objective based player versus player, that's exactly what Overwatch is. Whereas Team Fortress only has a handful of characters, Overwatch has 21 different characters right now. And all of them have different ability sets, have different super moves, similar to like Street Fighter. They all move differently, handle differently. They have different UIs. So there's a lot going on. There's a lot to learn. Much how you like, if you were to play a fighting game, you would pick a favorite and that would be like your main character. Like, you know, I was always really into Blanka and Zangief. Mm-hmm. Do the same thing in Overwatch. You kind of practice with one character and get better. And different characters fulfill different roles. So there's characters that are better at defense, offense, there's healers, support characters, in a lot of ways similar to like an MMORPG, you know, if you're running through a dungeon. Where Overwatch really succeeds is that it is the most gorgeous, polished-looking shooter I've ever touched. It literally looks and feels like you're playing a Pixar film.
Hmm.
It's stunning. Like, I'm playing it on PC, and I have an oak. My PC is not like by any means a super PC, but it's okay. And it looks and handles beautifully. I mean, the netcode is just phenomenal. There's no lag, there's no weird rubber banding. Everything is just silky, silky smooth. And it's wonderful to look at. So the big thing that I noticed about Overwatch, and the reason why it's getting so many great reviews, is just that it kind of just feels like you're eating like mouthfuls of candy as you're playing it. Like every minute is just action packed and there's never a dull second. Kills are very, very fast. Like you get in, you can play, you know, a whole round in maybe 5-10 minutes. Then it moves on and you're already moving on to the next round. The UI is just like, it's so easy to look at and easy to play and easy to learn. That I think like anybody could pick this game up and enjoy it no matter what kind of game player they are. Like if you like sniping, there's characters for you. If you like building base defenses, there's characters that can build turrets and stuff. Healers, it's like it's crazy. It's like you mush all these different things together into a shooter and then you just face these characters off against one another for a nice Royal Rumble. So
I'll tell you what, they're I went and looked at their website because you were talking about it prior to the game's release. They probably have the best, like, again, like you were talking about polish. This is like the most polished game website that I have seen for any game that I can think of in recent memory. Right. Like, because basically I went to the website and I was like, I want to know what this game is about. And literally it tells you exactly what the game is about. Not like in some weird marketing jargon where it's like, you know, pick your weapon, become a hero. It's like in Overwatch, you control one of seven heroes in competitive six-person team shooting matches. And it's like, okay, I know exactly what this game is about now.
Right.
You can go and look at all the characters. You can go and watch all of their moves. There's like animations for all the moves. Each, you know, like the text has button callouts. Like it's like you're reading a game manual. There's button callouts. So it's like you'll fire your primary weapon and then it tells you what that default option is on PC, PS4, and Xbox One. It's like I've never seen a website that does something like this before. It's just
it is really slick. And the whole game is kind of like that. You just get in and you're just like, you're kind of put at ease. It's weird. I mean, and you're really into user experience and stuff, Scott. So you kind of understand what I'm talking about, but the way that the game is laid out, it's so easy to just jump in and learn. There's like the learning curve is just, it doesn't exist, because if you've played any kind of shooter before, you can like pick a character with a gun and know what you're doing within 5 seconds. But then learning the intricacies of each character is really where the fun lies. It's like, it's the same. I kind of liken it again to a fighting game where you can kind of get in and button mash and have fun. And you can do the same thing in Overwatch, but then you learn how to do different combos with different characters and learn, you know, what classes work well together and, you know, learn the maps and learn where to, you know, the best sniping nests and things like that. And it's so fast and so fun and just in, like I said, like a big bowl of candy that it's hard not to have a good time.
I think so, that's the major challenge is how do you make a game like this, you know, an arena hero shooter game or whatever? How do you make a game that caters to people that are, you know, quote unquote, like professional players or people that study, you know, like the underlying statistics of the game or whatever you want to call it versus the people that, you know, because there are people that don't follow game news and game blogs and they walk by the display, you know, at the store and they go, oh, Overwatch, this looks cool. The characters look cool. Let me bring this game home and play it. And that's the real challenge is that if those people pick up that game and they get into a game and just get obliterated by all the people that have been playing for 2 weeks straight, you know, that's not going to be a great experience for them. So for, you know, for Blizzard to be able to put something together, like you said, that welcomes you like right at the start, gives you the tools to, you know, learn your moves and figure out your characters in an environment that's, you know, not toxic as well. Like, I think that's a big deal. And it sounds like from what you're saying, they kind of like were able to hit all of those notes and then, you know, deliver a game that also is not broken, you know, on launch. Cause so often these games come out and it's like, oh, all the servers are broken. So I have to wait 2 more days to play.
Yeah, supposedly Overwatch had, during their open beta weekend, had over 9 million people playing the open beta.
Wow, that's crazy.
Which is just a, you know, that's a massive amount of people. But Blizzard, if anyone could handle numbers, it's Blizzard,
That's what they do. They have, you know, a bunch of games that exist online, you know, a bunch of games that are competitive. So this is not like their first time doing something like this. So it's nice to see that they just kind of maintain this level of quality. It's really cool.
Right. So the other thing I should say is there's no real leveling of characters or anything like that. There's no experience system. There's no, you know, there's no items. There's nothing of that sort in Overwatch. The only things you get are you get different emotes for your characters. You get different skins, which are actually different models in this game, which is pretty cool. So you can have your character look completely differently. And they're all in random loot boxes similar to, you know, Mass Effect 3.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, why don't you tell us about the loot boxes and what that like means for the game and I guess why somebody would buy one in the first place.
Well, everything is, like I said, with Overwatch, everything is purely cosmetic. So if you really like are into a character or something like that, you may like love one of their legendary skins. Like if you look, there's like each character I think has like about 10 skins right now. And the ones on the bottom of the list are their legendary skins, which makes them look completely different. And they just look, you know, really cool. And if you're into that sort of thing and into that level of Blizzard polish, you may, you know, grind out some levels because you as a player level up. And every time you level up, you get a loot box. So you may want to level up to open up a loot box and see what you get. And you'll get different spray paints for your characters. You can spray paint on walls. You get different emotes and player icons and that sort of stuff. But it's all cosmetic and it doesn't impact the way that you play at all. Which a lot of people really like, because I think Overwatch is really going for, you know, to be a very big competitive game. I can see, you know, teams, well-coordinated teams, really, you know, spending a lot of time getting good with their particular characters, similar to how people do in the fighting game community.
That's really interesting. I mean, like I said, it seems to straddle like both sides. You know, it looks approachable enough that a casual fan can enjoy the game, but also it's, you know, complex enough under the hood that you can really, like you said, learn about the characters and combos and special moves, and then like combos between characters and things like that. Putting together a team that makes sense. The only thing, if there is any kind of like negative note that I've heard about this game so far, is that like maybe there's not enough game modes, I suppose. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, right now, they basically have two primary modes. It's like a capture a point mode, where you're essentially, you know, going to a point in the map, you're trying to capture it away from the other team, and you basically stand on the node, and it fills up with your team's color. If the other team comes in and infiltrates it in time, it fills up with that team's color, and you try and, you know, basically break their control. And there's also an escort mission, which I really love. You have to escort this sort of vehicle along the road. And as you stand close to the vehicle, it'll move. If you move away from the vehicle, it'll move away. So one team's trying to stay close to this vehicle and escort it to the end of the map, and the other team's trying to disrupt them, which is a really fun, you know, fun way of playing. It's very different from a, you know, competitive shooter to actually do this kind of escort mission type thing.
That's cool.
Those are the only two that really stand out to me now, and I played quite a bit. So there's no like just team deathmatch type thing. And that's another thing I should say. There's no real, you don't, at the end of a match, you don't see people's like kill death ratio. You don't see that. They just kind of highlight a handful of players that did things well.
Oh, so cool.
If you were a really good healer, or if you're a really good defender, it'll tell the rest of the players that, hey, this guy did good at this. This guy got like 20% of the kills. This guy, you know, healed 30% of the damage on his team. And so there's no big display to force players to kind of go off and not perform as a team. So it really promotes teamwork, which I think is neat.
Yeah, now that you mention that, I'm looking at the game modes on the website, and there are no, every mode of the game is objective based. And I bet that there was probably a conscious decision to do that because, you know, speaking as a casual player of games like this, like I don't enjoy those modes and I don't care about my kill death ratio. Like I just want to have a fun time playing the game. And really sometimes that just means doing an objective, and a deathmatch wouldn't even really work for a game like this when you have people that have different roles on the team, you know?
Right.
Because what is a healer going to do in a mode like this? They're not going to have any kills. They shouldn't, right? They should be supporting their team, right? So just kind of...
The price on this game right now is $40 on PC. I don't know what it is on console. I want to say that it's close to that as well. So it actually started out being sold, since there is no, you know, big story or anything like that. It's just all, you know, PvP.
Oh, it is not that anymore. It appears to be $60 everywhere.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe that was just a day one type thing.
No, I think, well, Amazon, if you're Prime, you can get a game for like 20% off on pre-order.
Okay.
And then the day this game came out, or like the day before this game came out, Battleborn went like straight down to $40.
Yeah. I did see that. I did see that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I definitely say, you know, check it out. It is, like I said, very different from Battleborn, which I guess I'll talk about very briefly just because I don't want to drone on too long about this stuff. But it's really polished. It's really fun. It reminds me so much of playing Team Fortress in my youth. You know, the level of adrenaline with the matches and how fast the kills were, and just kind of learning the maps and learning the intricacies of all the characters is just really, really exciting. And, you know, it sold really well. It's doing really well. So you'll probably see more than the initial 21 characters. So good stuff.
So cool. from the layman's perspective, what is the difference between the two?
Yeah, let's talk about Battleborn then.
So just real Battleborn, quick,
like, I mean, you can just literally give me the differences if you want. Like, that's all.
Sure.
I don't really understand. They both, you could also tell me why it's not a MOBA, because they all look like the same game to me over and over again. I don't know what the difference
Overwatch
between League and Overwatch is.
Right. Well, Overwatch is not a MOBA by any way, shape, or form. It's just not. Overwatch is just a competitive shooter with a multitude of different character classes. So it is closer to something like, you know, like I said, Team Fortress or, you know, action Quake than it is to something like League of Legends, right?
Okay.
Battleborn is more of a MOBA because the object is not to eliminate other players and take nodes on the map. It's actually to escort minions to an objective.
Right.
And so when you play Battleborn competitively, you're actually trying to, rather than eliminate players, which you can do, you're trying to accomplish the goal of escorting your units to a specific point on the map. So there's different lanes, like there are lanes in MOBAs, and your minions will travel down that lane to an objective point, and your job is to escort them and get them to that objective point over and over and over again until you rack up points and win the game.
Okay.
So that's, you know, that's one of the main modes of Battleborn, which is a very MOBA thing. That's you know, very much what a lot of the MOBAs do.
But you said it feels like Team Fortress, though.
Overwatch.
Very much. I thought you said Battleborn.
See, you can't help it.
Fuck.
No, this is the problem that these games had, I think, from the beginning. And this is unfortunately, you know, Battleborn's kind of getting trounced right now, and it is also a really good game, but I think it's the similarities between the two and the fact that they're both
marketed towards the same people.
When you refer
to your avatars as heroes or champions, you're tapping into a specific player base, you know?
Yeah.
And those are the same people that play League too, because it's the same words, you know? It's like, choose a hero, choose a champion, a guardian, or whatever you want to call it, you know?
Yeah.
Even though the games are actually very different from one another, it's you're trying to tap into that same pool of players and eyeballs and wallets, and I think that's what makes it tricky.
Right. Battleborn's different for a lot of reasons. One, it takes a lot longer to kill an opponent in Battleborn, so a lot of Battleborn characters have shields similar to Halo, so I kind of liken it to...
It's like Borderlands, right?
So it's like killing another player or, you know, or even killing someone in Halo. Killing someone in Halo takes a lot longer than it does in like a Call of Duty, right?
Sure, sure.
So Overwatch is sort of Call of Duty speed, and Battleborn is more Halo speed with the shields, and you know, it just takes a while to kind of chip away at somebody, which I really like. Battleborn also has a lot of characters that are strictly melee, which Overwatch really has a handful of melee characters, but they're really few and far between. I want to say two out of the whole group have melee attacks in Overwatch. In Battleborn, there's a good, you know, maybe six or seven or eight that are melee characters. So there is a really comprehensive melee system in Battleborn, which is really neat if you learn how to melee well. That's really kind of cool. There's I think a wider variety of characters in Battleborn because the Battleborn universe there's a star. It's the last star in all the universe. And all these surviving races are racing toward this last star to save it. And so you have people from all over, you know, different walks of life. So you have like lizard people and, you know, fucking giant monsters and robots and all sorts of things in Battleborn. So there's a massive cast of characters in Battleborn, whereas Overwatch is primarily humans and there's like a gorilla and a robot.
Right.
But everybody else is a human being in Overwatch. So in Battleborn also has a story mode where you can actually play through, I want to say, eight different story adventures. Each one's like a giant instance from, you know, either World of Warcraft or Borderlands, and you can play through with other characters and fight waves of monsters and things like that. So there is a PvE mode in Battleborn that does not exist in Overwatch. So you can get in with your friends and fight, you know, waves of monsters and stuff like that, sort of like a horde mode type thing.
Okay.
In Battleborn as well. Battleborn also has character leveling, which Overwatch doesn't have. So Battleborn, you can actually level your characters up to level 15. As you level them up, they'll unlock different specializations for when you play as them. So different kind of perks unlock for each character as you play as them a lot. And that doesn't exist in Overwatch. So if you have someone who's played a lot of Battleborn and they've unlocked a lot of the perks for their characters, they're, you know, in theory going to be better than someone who's a level one character in Battleborn and hasn't unlocked anybody. So there's that. And there's also a loot system in Battleborn where you can actually you open loot crates similar to Overwatch. Inside are random items. You can actually equip those items on your character and they'll give you different bonuses like plus 5% attack speed or you know, faster reloads, things like that. So those are some things that kind of, in a lot of ways, people are saying it's taking it away from the competitive space because some people won't have access to those like legendary loot drops and things like that.
Right.
That being said, Battleborn is a hell of a lot of fun. Like it is also really polished, all the characters are very different and very fun to play. You have people that can heal and teleport and fly and, you know, different monsters that can go invisible and crazy shit like that, all running around this map, you know, healing each other and you know, trying to help each other out, which is really fun and different.
And Battleborn is team-based as well?
It's team-based. So you do team-based and you're trying to, you know, do a variety of different things, from taking objectives on the map to escorting minions to, you know, just wiping out enemy players. Okay. But it's also really fun. It's just, you know, it's a lot slower than Overwatch. And I just think that something happened along the way. I don't know if it was marketing or if, I don't know if it was just the how close these two games were to one another. But, you know, I think Battleborn's kind of getting a little bit of the cold shoulder from the gaming world right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a couple of things. I think Overwatch is inherently focused on positivity, and Battleborn is like, you know, it's basically what happens when the creators of Borderlands decide to venture sort of like into a different lane. I'm not saying that they need to stay in their lane, but they're kind of doing something a little different. And so if you're like a Borderlands fan and you pick up this game and you expect Borderlands, you might be a little disappointed. And if you pick up Battleborn and you wanted Overwatch, then you might be a little disappointed, right? So it's like they kind of needed to show you what is different about this game and why you would want to play it. And you know, again, I think it still comes back to the way that they label the things. If they call them heroes or champions or whatever, like, that's the difference. Like, in Borderlands, they didn't call them that. They called them Vault Hunters because it was tied to the narrative. You know, it, like, there's a basis for what it is. And when you use the different words to describe it, those are words that describe a genre of games that are like, have different gameplay styles, but are like, again, same group of people. It's catering to that audience of like, you know, everything's online now, like competitive, you know, opening crates, like, you know, sometimes free to play, sometimes not. Like, it's all that stuff that's kind of like looped together now in all of these games.
Right. Right. No, there's definitely, and there are similarities, you know, you have the different heroes. And you have some that even function, you know, they're very close to one another and how they function. It's funny, after playing them both, I'm like, oh, this guy's just like the other guy from the other game.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, to decide between which game to play, it's almost like, what type of game modes are you looking to do? You know, maybe that would be a better way to pick between the two if you had to pick.
Right. I would say with a casual group of friends who want to get in and do a bunch of different stuff, I think you could have a lot of fun with both. But I think Battleborn, there's more to do, there's more to unlock right now, and there's you know, I think with the fact that you can level, you know, you can level each one of the 25 heroes, now 26 heroes in Battleborn, and it'll take you, you know, 5-6 hours to level them up all the way to 15 and to do their like master unlock. So you have a lot of, like, if you were the type that wanted to unlock everything for everyone, it would take you literally forever. I mean,
right.
And there's just a lot to do. Whereas Overwatch is more of a get in there, play a quick game for half an hour. If you get unlock a cool skin, that's fine. It's not going to change anything anyway. You know, if you want to get really good, you're going to have to spend some time getting really good, but you could still probably get in and, you know, do like I do and just fly around with a jetpack and hit people with bazooka shells. Like, it's,
that's cool.
It's really, yeah, it's fun.
You know what I think is really interesting about the whole Overwatch thing is, like, when you describe the game, you basically are describing Star Wars Battlefront, but people didn't like Star Wars Battlefront. Like, it was a casual game, but there wasn't a lot to do. But if you look at the game modes in Overwatch, there's not a lot to do, but somehow one game is successful and everybody loves it, and the other one, like, people were annoyed by what was offered. I just think that's very fascinating.
I think the main difference is the level of polish on each one of the 21 different classes. Mm-hmm. The fact that each one, I mean, there's a character that can rewind time, and there's a character that can throw up a giant force field and, you know, do jet powered shoulder blocks, and a guy that has, you know, a grappling hook and can like grapple people out of the air, and characters that can fly. And it's just, the list goes on and on and on. And each character has a very different play mechanic to them. I think that is the real draw. It's not the game itself and the modes. It's more of the what each character is bringing to the table and how those characters interact that is the real, I think, draw to Overwatch. Yeah. You know, it's the same thing the fighting communities love for a long time. Like, oh, what's it like when a Zangief faces off against the Guile? Well, it's like now, like, you can do the same thing, but with massive groups of people in 3D, with a shooter, right?
Yep. So awesome.
Good stuff. So anyway, enough about those. Pick them both up. They're both great. Don't pick up Battleborn because Overwatch is out, because it's a great game too.
Cool.
Neat.
Well, let's talk about Quantum Break.
Quantum Break. I'm already predicting that this is going to be my game of 2016.
Uh-oh.
Whoa. Yeah. We're halfway through the year, and I loved Quantum Break. Played through the whole thing. It is really fascinating. I think the best way I could describe it would be if Remedy and Don't Nod were hanging out at a party and they started talking about like time travel, and then they went off in like separate directions and started making a game basically, but they made separate games. You know, Don't Nod made Life is Strange and Remedy makes Quantum Break, but right. Somewhere in the middle, while they're making Quantum Break, they're also watching a lot of Fringe, like they're binge watching Fringe on TV. And they're okay. Just like, man, I really love Fringe. And everybody's sitting around, they're like, yeah, Fringe is great. And they're like, well, what if we kind of made, you know, something like that? It's like, it's crazy. So Quantum Break, gameplay wise, is sort of similar to Alan Wake, where it's a third person shooting game. But the difference in Quantum Break is that your character, you know, through a series of events in the story, is able to do things with time in the game. And the overarching narrative of the game is that time is broken, or there's a, you know, a fracture in time that creates all this like havoc and chaos. And then there's interpersonal stories throughout the game and things like that. And the presentation of the game is really interesting too. And basically what you do is there's 5 acts in the game. So you'll play through an act of the game, and then you will play a short sequence of the game from the perspective of the other side, like the antagonist character. You'll play like a narrative piece as that character, and then you'll make a decision about something in the game. So there's like sort of a branching narrative, and then after you make that decision, then you watch a 30-minute TV show about like what just happened in the game.
Okay.
And then the next act begins.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy, dude. So the game, the main guy is what's his face, Iceman, Sean Ashmore.
Uh-huh.
Is the main character. And then the dude, I know him from Lost, his name's like Dominic. He was in Lord of the Rings too.
Lord of the Rings, yeah. Dominic Monaghan.
Yeah, so he's in the game, and the antagonist is I don't know the names, but it's Littlefinger from Game of Thrones.
Oh, I don't know his real name either. But yes.
And then did you ever watch Fringe, Matt?
Only the first part of the first season, I think.
Okay. Whoa, Ash is on. What's going on, buddy?
I have the kid.
Breaking news. Breaking news. Ash brought in a baby.
Brought him to his first podcast.
Welcome to your first podcast.
He wasn't behaving with mom, so he's here hanging with you guys.
Oh, that's cool. I don't even want to talk about this game anymore. Hey, little man.
He says hi. Did you hear him? He said hello to you guys.
Yeah.
All right. I just wanted him to say hi. You can continue talking about Quantum Break.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'll do that.
He thinks all this gear is really cool. He's looking around like, what is all this shit?
Teach me how to podcast, Dad.
I want a podcast.
Dad, will I have a man cave one day?
he just shit on me. All right.
Okay.
I'm gonna hang out here.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
He's being pretty good. So
did you guys watch Fringe?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Colonel Broyles is in the game too, that guy.
Broyles.
Yeah, the guy with the deep voice. He's like got a very awesome presence.
Aiden Gillen is Peter Baelish from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and then the guy that plays Colonel Broyles is, let's see, his name is Lance Reddick.
Yes.
He's
been in a lot of things.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of things. And then there is a great supporting cast too of people that I wasn't as familiar with, but they're awesome. And there are people that are like in the TV show that are like not in the game and vice versa. And it's like a really weird thing. But what they designed is a game where you play as the main character, and then the TV show is more focused on what's happening sort of like on the other side. So like what's happening in the world of the antagonist, you know, while you, you know, while the hero is doing something, like other things are happening in the background too. So it kind of goes back and forth. And, you know, depending on the branch points that you pick and some of the things that you find and do within the game influences the things that you get to see, play out in the TV show as well. But, and it's not just because Lance Reddick is in it. It really does remind me of like a Fringe movie that never happened, you know? And it's just, it's really interesting. I hesitate to call the game a shooter because that's not really why you would pick up a game like this. It is a third person shooter, but you, you know, eventually you get these time powers and that's really the draw of the combat portion of the game. But honestly, there are parts of some acts where like, I don't think you encounter a single enemy. It's mostly just about like, you know, uncovering the story. So it's a very narrative heavy game, which is like something that I'm super stoked on. But yeah, it's great. Like the, you know, the
I'm glad you liked it, man. I've heard mixed stuff about it. And I heard that they really don't penalize you for using your time powers a lot, which is cool.
Yeah.
But then I heard the shooting isn't like the best. It's just kind of okay.
Yeah. And it's like, the reason why I say that it's not a shooter is because they, you know, even if you play on the expert mode, they give you the option to have, like a heavy aim assist in the game. And, I turned it on because the aiming I found to be a little weird. Like I felt like, you know, based on my experience playing other shooting games like Division and, you know, whatever else, like I feel like I'm pretty good at aiming my screen at an enemy and then pulling the button to zoom in and then generally being targeting, you know, the enemy that I was just looking at. And I was really having a hard time doing that with Quantum Break. So I don't know, you know, like in my opinion, like you would not play this game, you know, if you're a shooter fan. But like, honestly, once you get your powers, it's so much fun. And it's like not even about the guns anymore. It's just about like doing like, you know, all these tricks. So you basically get like 6 or 7 time-based powers. And you, it's more like tactical, the way that you chain them together, the way that you use them tactically. They all have different cooldowns, different ways that, you know, different times that you can use them and things like that. So, that's really what the combat is about. And then the rest of it is really just narrative. And I think that, you know, the turnoff for some people is, you know, maybe it is super narrative heavy, but like, that's why you would play a game like that, I think, yeah. You know? But yeah, I had a blast with it. And, not to give anything away, I don't think it gives anything away, but they clearly would like to do a sequel to this game. And it's just like, I feel like, you know, at times you are watching a TV show, but it really, the whole experience kind of feels like you're watching a movie.
And that's awesome.
Yeah. And if you're, you know, like just in the same way, like if you play Mass Effect or Dragon Age and you like to stop at every codex and read every single thing that's happening in the game, like this is one of those games where like you go to a computer and there's an email and you read the email. And, something else that Remedy does really, really well is they put in like meaningful, information in the environment too. So there will be parts in the game where there will be like a whiteboard in a university and you can sit there and read the whiteboard. And like, it tells you things about the game, you know? So it's not just all like codex entries. There's environmental things and the environments are gorgeous and stuff like that too. So, and then there's a couple of, Alan Wake Easter eggs in the game, which like lead me to believe that there may be some more Alan Wake in the future, which would be super awesome.
I'm excited. That would be cool. That.
Yeah. So,
you'll love it.
Yeah.
I know. I'm excited.
Any questions about Quantum Break?
I mean, the mechanic in the beginning sounds insane. So you're constantly narrative hopping essentially between different points in perspective. And then the choice you make in that narrative hop affects the storyline from there.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So you could probably play through the game, you know, at least twice choosing different, you know, cause every, they call them junction points. Every junction point has two choices. And because it's a, you know, a game about like time and time travel and things like that, like it's all kind of, it all kind of makes sense, like in the context of the narrative and the way that they do it. Oh, the thing that I'll add to this is that, the time aspect of the game, you know, cause we always like to talk about time travel rules.
Yeah.
This might be spoilery, but I don't think it would ruin anything. Basically their time travel rules is that you can travel, backwards or forwards in time, but you can only travel as far back as when the machine was first created.
Interesting. Okay.
So it's not like it seems very like quote unquote realistic, where it's like not omnipowerful and you can't just like, oh, I'll go back one day before you and you'll go back one day before me and we'll continue to kill each other until somebody wins. It's like, no, like basically from the time that the machine was turned on and conceived, you can go backward or forward in that span of time, which I think is really, it plays like sort of a pivotal role in the
story. So you can't actually go into the future. You can just travel back to the when the machine was created and then back to the current.
Yeah, kinda. It's kind of weird that the way that they tackle things, and there's like a lot of nuance in the way that they thought about their time travel. So I think it gets around a lot of the things where it's like, oh, well, I'm just going to go back to when you were a child and kill you, you know, kill this person then, or I'll, you know, make this like sweeping change. Like you can't do that. So it creates a lot of really interesting tension in the game when like all the major players are sort of like trying to carry out their plans. I think it's really cool. That's so cool. Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, it's not a game that you would approach, I think, in the traditional sense. Like obviously there is shooting and you do need, you know, a little bit of skill to get through the combat parts of the game, but it's really more about like the overall experience. And then like there's a TV show too, and that's not bad either, you know? So, I would highly, highly recommend it if like, you know, you're into narrative and things like that. And, you know, there's difficulty settings. So if you don't want to do the combat, like you're not super stoked on that, you can still enjoy the game, play through it twice with like different choices. Like I was happy with the choices I had. So I think that's going to be my canon. So, and if this leads to Alan Wake 2, like even better.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So that's Quantum Break.
That is surprising. You had been talked so little leading up to it that you'd kept kind of quiet your opinion. I was like, oh man, I bet he doesn't like it. Oh. So to love it on the level that you do is encouraging. That's cool.
Yeah. No. I actually was like, once I got my hands on the game, like I just wanted to come. It's like binge watching a TV show because of the way, you know, the pacing of the game. It's like you play an act and you're like, oh, this seems like a good place to stop. And then like the next day I would just be like, I want to come back and see what happens next. Like, yeah, you just want to know.
Yeah.
And of course, like anything, you know how it is, like dealing with time travel, like with Life is Strange and things like that. Like all that stuff is so fascinating because of all the different storylines and things you can pursue. And like this game does not let you down in that sense. So I'll leave it at that.
That's cool.
Yep. Glad you liked it, man. That's a positive.
Yeah, it was a good one. So good, I'm really happy. So how about take a break?
Let's all say it at the same time. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. Take a break.
Question of the week. Question of the week.
Sounds good.
And you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
We are back with our question of the week. And this one was just born out of curiosity. He said, keep us in the loop. What are you currently playing, watching, and or reading? Let us know. And the first one is from Alyssa, who is Alyssa Bits. And she says she's on her third read through of the Imperial Raditz trilogy in the last 3 months. And I have a problem that needs to be stopped. And I wanted to look up what this was, because I was very curious. It says, this book follows Breck, the sole survivor of a starship destroyed by treachery in the vessel of that ship's artificial consciousness, as she attempts to revenge herself on the ruler of her civilization.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, so, cool. Imperial Raditz Trilogy. Check it out.
Cool. Jesse Lamb at Axel99 says, currently playing Hitman. I would love to hear how that is. Watching Person of Interest, it is so good, and reading One Punch Man. I think between you and the internet, like I'm on the hype train for Person of Interest. I might have to start watching it.
It's really good, man.
Might be my summer
especially
show.
Telling you, once they get the dog, then it is like the best thing ever.
Well,
like,
I mean, now that I know
it builds up to getting the dog.
Well, now that I know that getting past the first season is the key, like, because I watched like real time, watched the first like 4 or 5 episodes, and I was like, I can't get into this at all. It just seemed too like samey.
It was, It is very, I mean, not to diss on the show, cause I do really like it. The first season's a little hard to get through. And then literally maybe the last 3 episodes of season 1 and then season 2, just it's great from there on out.
Awesome. That's cool.
Yeah.
Lana Winst at Lana Winst 03 says, catching up with SOTOR. I'm anxiously waiting for Torian. watching True Blood and reading Pride and Prejudice again.
I wish I had time to go back to SWTOR.
Yeah.
I wish I had time for SWTOR too, man. Yeah. That was fun for a while.
Yeah, there's something about it I miss a little bit. A little bit.
It's Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, that's all it is.
We had fun doing that. I never finished my story. I think Ash was the only person that did of our group.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I'm actually got a computer I could play it on now.
Yes. Yes, you could.
I think it's free to play. Might be worth it.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about playing StarCraft too. I never played it.
That's cool. Yeah, do that.
I love StarCraft. Yeah. Anyways.
Michael Cole says Overwatch, so much Overwatch.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely on the Overwatch train. I bet you he's really good.
Oh yeah.
Coles is like really good at games. I'm like pretty bad. I remember playing with him and being this insane.
If you're pretty bad, what am I?
Well, what is Scott? Scott's like up there with Coles. When he tries in games, it's like...
Yeah, when Scott figures it out.
Coles was introduced to me as the general, so I think that like...
That's true.
...set the tone for his skill in the game. But I wouldn't put myself where he is. I think, like you said, maybe if I thought about it for a little bit, I could figure it out. But he just seems to be good at these games.
Yeah.
Let's see. Tara at NA Bicky says Overwatch, Fallout 4, rinse and repeat. Yeah. I think Xbox One is getting mod support for Fallout 4 like right now,
which is great. Yeah, it's cool. Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Let's just keep this train rolling. Tasman at Tasman says Overwatch, then more Overwatch. I'll get Blood and Wine soonish.
It's a Witcher 3 DLC. It's a great time to be a gamer, I think.
Yeah.
It really is. Amanda says finishing Fahaba and then moving on to Blood and Wine, all the DLC.
Mm-hmm. Kyle at Kiel Hal says playing Overwatch, watching Kimmy Schmidt, and reading via audiobook The Stand by Stephen King. Hey.
It's a long one. You got a lot of going.
Mm-hmm.
TGS at FL Todd, and I'll read his first. Uncharted 4 and Overwatch. Wish I could say The Division, but still too many issues to warrant more of my gaming time. And I wanted to throw a quick shout out to Todd because he does pins and buttons. And I don't know if did he give you one, Scott?
Yeah, a Division pin, yeah.
Yeah, he gave me a Division pin as well. And it's like a loot extraction pin, which is really cool. But he's got a site called Spoking Fun at spokingfun.bigcartel.com. And he's a good guy. And he sells cool, funny little pins and badges.
Very cool.
Yeah, he's awesome. On... I think you can follow him on Instagram as well at FL Todd.
FL Todd, yeah.
Yeah, and he's cool. He has great pins, and he always shares, like, I guess the pin community, like, shares pins with one another, and he always posts, like, those pins, and he's just a really great guy. I know him IRL.
Yeah, we know him IRL. He's a Florida dude.
Yeah, so go
ahead.
He's
been a longtime listener, too, of the podcast, which is... I shouldn't say surprising.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not surprising, but it's like, you know, like with any creative venture, you start out with all of your friends listening or watching or subscribing or whatever it is, and then they kind of fall off and you get your own fans organically, but he's stuck with us, and that's awesome.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
I agree with you on the Division, though. I'm going to take a extended break and wait and see what happens in the future.
Yeah. Melissa K, Quad Skater, hey, Melissa, says, listening to Departure by A.G. Riddle. She says she's super into it, and I looked up what this book is, and it says, the world's past and future rests in the hands of five unwitting strangers in this definitive edition of A.G. Riddle's time-traveling, mind-bending, speculative thriller. So I love time travel stuff. Cool. I will perhaps add this to the Audible list.
Mm-hmm. Alex at Dusty Tulip says, playing Overwatch, watching Game of Thrones, reading Silkworm by Robert Galbraith, a.k.a. J.K. Rowling. Oh, cool. That is fascinating.
Oh yeah, that's the one she put out under a pen name. I forgot about that.
Neat.
Yeah. Timmy Time at Game Fan Gen says watching Alphas, playing WoW, SWTOR, Fallout 4, Dragon Age, Persona 3, FES, whatever that is, SMT, Nocturne, Dragon's Dogma, and Lego Jurassic World.
That's quite the queue.
That is a queue of games.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Justin Banks at Sir Kingsman says, playing Uncharted 4, what an end to a great adventure. Thanks, Naughty Dog. I need to play these one of these years. I'll have to play through all these.
Yeah, me too. I've got all the first three just sitting in discs form for my PS3 that I never played.
That's one of those games that's going to get me because I played the first three and then basically sold my PlayStation 3 and now I really want to play the last one, and the only way I can do that is by getting a PlayStation.
Yeah,
unfortunately. But remember,
you could
rent one, right? You used to be able to rent one from,
no, like, you used to be able to, but
you could rent a console from like Blockbuster Video. I think that was a thing at one time.
Yeah. Are you guys listening to and or reading anything that you haven't mentioned yet? Probably reading. We probably went through all our TV shows and games.
Not right now. I'm actually not. No. Little bit of podcast stuff, but it's been no readings right now for me.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Scott? I've just been listening to audiobooks and I listened to War of Art that you recommended to me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and I, you know, like we talked earlier, last week I finished Star Wars Bloodline, which was pretty good. And pretty much like War of Art kind of like sent me on a path of listening to like similar books that are just like, hey, you want to do something? Just go do it. You know, like
that book is fantastic.
Yeah, it's a good
motivator.
If I haven't
recommended that book on the podcast, that is a book everybody should read.
If you have any desire to do something but not the motivation to actually get up and do it, you should listen to War of Art.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Where were we?
Carlo, Platinum Fist, Quantum Break.
Yay.
And picked up the Uncharted collection. Just need to find the time. The future game pile grows larger after E3.
Yeah, it really
Very
does.
True.
Ness, Paper by the Ton. Hey, Ness says, I just read If I Was Your Girl by Meredith Russo and All the Birds in the Sky by Charlie Jane Anders, and I'm dead. Okay. I think I wrote down the description for If I Was Your Girl. It says, Amanda Hardy is a new girl in school. Like anyone else, all she wants is to make friends and fit in, but Amanda is keeping a secret, and she's determined not to get close to anyone. When she meets a sweet, easygoing Grant, Amanda can't help but start to let him into her life. As they spend more time together, she realizes just how much she's losing by guarding her heart. She finds herself yearning to share with Grant everything about herself, including her past, but Amanda is terrified that once she tells him the truth, he won't be able to see past it. This sounds like my life story.
What is the truth? Kate Dollarhide, hey Kate, at Kate D says Overwatch.
You know, the big smiley. Drifting says play WoW Legion beta. Is that WoW has another?
Yep.
Wow.
Legion's coming out.
Okay.
Whoa.
Overwatch and The Division. Watching Broadchurch, which I've heard nothing but good things about and have not watched it.
Mm.
And Orphan Black. And Ooh. Then reading Nemesis Games. Hey. There you go. Hell yeah.
Guys, this season of Orphan Black is so good. So good.
I wouldn't know.
Yep.
I got to get there. It's a lot of TV to watch.
Yeah, there is a lot of TV. A lot of games, too.
Andrew Baker, A Baker N7, says, currently playing Fallout 4, The Division, Costume Quest 2, watching Game of Thrones, Penny Dreadful, and Person of Interest. This
nice
man.
List.
That is a list.
Yep.
That's a good old, solid list.
That's like the filet mignon of lists.
Costume Quest 2 was Games with Gold.
It sure was.
Yeah. It's fun. Yeah, super nice. Fun. It's definitely fun for free.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris Jenkins at Claw Glip says, cleaning up some leftover bosses in Dark Souls 3, starting Uncharted 3 so I can play 4, and just finished The Path on Hulu.
Well, I haven't watched that yet. It looks interesting.
Yeah. The banner is always there when you log in.
Scott, Chris, you read his name like we haven't read it 223 times. You're like, Claw Glip?
Yeah, I trip over words a lot when I read, so I'm just taking it easy. Just taking it easy, guys.
I just remembered I just picked up the first book in the Ravenloft series.
Oh, nice.
Because I think we're going to do a local playthrough of that new Ravenloft D&D 5th edition thing.
Oh, nice.
That would be fun.
Robert Freemering at Mr. Slick says, I'm alternating between Doom on my new PC and Uncharted 4. All the fall shows ended and Castle is gone for good. Mm. Frowny face.
Mm-hmm.
No more Castle.
No more Castle. Wanting too much money.
Yeah. Too much money.
I
have no idea what we're going to watch in the fall. Like, so many things got canceled. It's such a bummer.
Yeah.
There's still stuff, man. Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah, we'll always find stuff. It'll all be on Netflix.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yep. Well, we did it.
We did it.
Hey.
Let's put a cork in this fucking episode.
Hey, I had a thought.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think we just made a record.
What?
What?
I think we had the youngest podcaster ever on a podcast.
Yeah, probably.
I think so, yeah. He's like 20 days.
He's definitely on. We hear him multiple times. He's been on.
Oh, he's on it now?
Yeah, yeah.
He's contributing. Contributing to the show.
He's got things to say. It's like he wants to talk about the poop that comes out of his foot.
Yeah. Well, you can do that for him. You do a great job of that.
I'll talk for him. I'll be his proxy.
Excellent.
You guys want to call it?
Call it.
All right. Thank you guys for listening to episode 234 of the Rated NA podcast. As always, you can find us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate. You can email us directly, and that's at MattScottAsh@NerdAppropriate.com or nerds@NerdAppropriate.com for general questions. You can go to our Facebook page. It's /NerdAppropriate on Facebook. You can go to our Twitch TV channel. It's Twitch.tv/NerdAppropriate. Please follow us there. We're going to be streaming as soon as this guy can be quiet for more than an hour at a time. And what else? What else we have? I think that's it for now, right?
Yeah, I think so.
YouTube/NerdAppropriate. You can go there. We have old videos of old episodes and stuff to listen to.
We have Instagram too, but that's usually active only when we go to conventions.
That's true. Yep. And I forgot to use it when I was at MegaCon. Yeah. Oops.
No worries.
But we'll be back next week with an all new show. And thank you guys so much for your patience. And thanks for answering our question of the week. We put out one tweet and got a lot of really great responses. So you guys are incredible humans, and we love you for it. And we will see you soon.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm actually like, usually when you guys all talk about games that I've never played, I don't really give a shit, but I actually want to know the difference between these two games and whether I should get one of them or not.
So
we're using that.
Let's do it.
I want to keep that in.
You keeping that?
Yeah, we're keeping that.
Usually I don't give a shit about what you guys say. But this week...